Hi, it's Evan Pagan. Today, I am excited to be interviewing a good friend of mine, someone that I consider to be one of the smartest marketing minds that's ever lived. His name's Alex Mondozian. Since 1991, Alex has generated over $233 million in sales and profits for himself and his client partners using electronic marketing media, such as infomercials, online catalogs, 24-hour recorded messages, voice and fax broadcasting, teleseminars, webinars, podcasts, and other forms of internet marketing. Alex has consulted with some top companies, including the Learning Annex, Dale Carnegie Training, NYU, One Shopping Cart, Strategic Coach, Trimspy. I got a whole list of stuff that he's done here, big companies you've heard from. He's also hosted teleseminars with many of the world's top thought leaders, such as Mark Victor Hansen, Jack Canfield, Stephen Covey, Les Brown. I mean, this goes on and on. If you know anything about Alex, you know he's interviewed just about every great thinker that's ever lived, and he's really wired into the thought leaders in our world today. Alex is the CEO of Heritage House Publishing, which is a boutique electronic marketing and publishing company that Alex says they repurpose written and spoken educational content for worldwide distribution. And Alex is also the founder of the Electronic Marketing Institute. At this point, he's trained over 8,300 teleseminar students and really believes in this as a strategy, which we'll get into hopefully in this interview. And one thing that's fascinating, and I've heard Alex talk about this before, is that his annual income became his hourly income by 2006. And, I could just go on and on. So Alex lives up in San Francisco with his wonderful wife, Amy, who I've met, has two kids, has a virtual company, takes over 90 free kind of vacation relaxation days each year, lives a great lifestyle that I think we would all love to live. And I think he's going to make a great model for us. So welcome to this interview, Alex.
Thank you, Evan.
So will you talk for a second? One of the things I asked you before we started here is maybe you could share a little bit about your background, how you learned about marketing, and how that transitioned to electronic marketing. Because most of the most interesting conversations that I've had with you have to do with marketing and selling conceptually and some of the techniques that I think really were developed before the internet came around, and then how you've used the internet and technology and electronic marketing methods to just, you know, soup up and put them on steroids and really amplify them. So maybe you could tell a little of your story.
Well, what's interesting is that I believed back in 1993, after coming off a very big learning experience, I lost over $250,000 in my first business venture. So I had no contacts in the business world, but I lost a lot of money getting into a franchise, a retail franchise. And the reason I lost that money is because I didn't know how to market. I took other people's advice, namely the franchisor, and they didn't have any experience. It wasn't experiential marketing. It was just hearsay marketing, and their binder had to do more with repurposing other people's content, which was old and dated. And so I lost a ton of money. Most of it wasn't even mine. And that was in 1989, and it took me about 4 years to crawl out of that hole. Never claimed bankruptcy, but had some very interesting experiences and, crawled out of the abyss and started walking on solid ground around 2003. But what I realized during that time period, which I consider my sabbatical because I just didn't have two nickels to rub, I moved back home, you know, with my mother, and I had no overhead, but I also had a ton of debt. And I figured what's going to get me out of debt is going to be marketing. And marketers, in my opinion, direct response marketers, which is what we're talking about today, they are the rainmakers of the world. You can have a top thought leader, such as a Donald Trump, but how big is Donald Trump's list? He may have huge pull and huge reach in the media, but I bet you he doesn't have a list. In fact, I know he doesn't have a list. He doesn't send an email out. He's invited to Learning Annex events, some of their wealth seminars, and he is a huge draw. And maybe he doesn't even need a list, but if we had the pull of Donald Trump and built a list, then with one push of a button these days with email, we can get access to them. And even with addresses, we can send out postcards, or if we have phone numbers, you know, voice broadcast, and fax numbers, fax broadcast, which are electronic methods we'll talk about. Mm. But what I realize is that if you're a marketer, people will come to you, because in my world, marketing is behavior modification. It's not creating demand, but rechanneling demand in a way so that people are coming to your front door versus somebody else's. Now, I believe marketing changes minds, but you need promotion to change behavior. So marketing is only half the equation. You need promotion to change the behavior. So with marketing, you can have your sales multiplied through all these marketing forces that get people to a call to action and get them to read something, but you need some kind of promotional angle to get them to act now. And so marketing changes minds, in my view, and promotion changes behavior. Marketing and promotion, you indicated marketing and sales. Mm. I call promotion sales, really. Marketing and promotion together, I think you have the keys to the castle when you learn those disciplines. And the good news is these are principles. They are principles that are immutable as gravity. You know them. Many people listening right now probably know them. But if you're a marketer, regardless of the content that you have, I think that you are a rainmaker, because you know how to get people to beat a path to your door. And with some promotion, people will buy now because they have a good enough reason why.
Mm. You know, I discovered direct response marketing and going for a conversion when I was a struggling, I don't know if you could use that term, but very struggling real estate agent. And I needed to figure out how to get the phone to ring. And I went to a real estate seminar, bought a book full of ads, went back to my office, ran one of them, and got zero calls, because the ad that I ran was a picture of a director's chair with a headline that said, "Evan Pagan is far too busy selling real estate to be posing for pictures," right?
You did that?
I swear, that was my first ad that I ever ran.
And I acknowledge you for admitting that.
And, my friends saw it, and they were like, "Wow, that's so cool. Like, I get it." But zero calls, right?
It was very clever.
It was very clever. And then I went to another real estate seminar and learned direct response marketing, and stayed up all night. I remember I borrowed my girlfriend's computer and used a word processing program and tried to trick it into laying this thing out, and laid out a direct response ad for a free report, and got, I don't remember, I think it was 15 or 20 calls. And I was completely blown away, because it was, you know, basically the same money, you know, spent in a publication in the same place. One, no calls, one, 15 or 20 calls. And that was when the light came on. What was it for you that made the lights come on about response-based advertising and conversion?
You know, that's such a great question. I was a retail manufacturer's rep, and I was, in 1990, when I was trying to get back on my feet, I was selling record-a-call answering machines, because back then, you know, voicemail wasn't that big a deal, and there were answering machines. And it was very frustrating, because it took so long to get the buyer of the retail chain, whether it was a Target or a Kmart. Back then, even Walmart wasn't as big as it is today. And, you know, they wouldn't say yes. You know, so they had the keys to the castle. They were the barrier. They were the gate. They were the moat to that castle. And I thought, wow, I want to get to the source. I want to get to the buyer. I don't want to get to the intermediary, which is the buyer to the retail trade. And why is that person's opinion so important? I want to get into the store because I know these things will sell. And so selling retail, which was non-direct response, that wasn't exciting to me because it wasn't fast enough. And an entrepreneurial CEO can't make a living that way. And you have to live in the area of the national office of the retail chain to make a living that way. So for Kmart, you know, it's in Michigan, and for Walmart, obviously, it's Bentonville, Arkansas, and for Target, it's Minneapolis, Minnesota, and, you know, there are many other chains. You know, Walgreens is in Chicago. You got to be in that area to make a living. With direct response, you can be anywhere and make a ton of money. So in 1992, I saw a commercial called the Thighmaster, and I called up the company on the 800 number. I said, listen, who buys the media? And the woman on the line said, I have no idea, but I can get you a number. got me a number, and I found out that the media company that was buying the media for the Thighmaster lived about, or the offices were about 25 minutes away from where I lived in Pasadena, which was in the home where my mom lives now in Pasadena. And so the gentleman who was running this media company, I figured whoever he was, I didn't know him at the time, but when I met him, you know, I found that he had some profound, profound success stories, because if you have the Thighmaster, then you must have other success stories, which he did. So I visited him and I said, I got a great idea. Now, back then, Home Shopping Network and QVC were not as public marketing forces as they are today, but they were both billion-dollar companies back then. And they are what's called destination channels. That's a term I coined about 10 years ago. That means instead of like a direct response infomercial or spot television where you go from channel to channel, you see the spot and then you buy it, a destination channel is where you physically go there and you're watching, sometimes as occupational therapy, just watching things getting sold. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so a destination channel has value because it has a following. It's almost like getting a Sharper Image catalog or a Frontgate catalog, because you know you read it, even though you know it's for commercial purposes. So I had this theory that if something's working on an infomercial or a spot television spot of like 60 seconds, like the Thighmaster was, then it should do even better on QVC or Home Shopping Network. And so that was the theory, and I approached the gentleman whose name was Gary. He was in Agoura Hills, and I said, look. He was doing all the media buying for, or most of the media buying for Tony Robbins' Personal Power One, which was a big hit back then. All the other Guthy Ranker infomercials, a lot of the spot TV stuff like Abdominizer and Roll of Magic and all the Rompo Peel products. I mean, if you have, if you can't sleep at night, you've seen some of these commercials back in the old days.
Yeah, so, right.
I said, hey, how about if I take Thighmaster to QVC and make a presentation? He said, no. I said, why not? He says, because it's too big a hit. I don't want you to mess it up. But you can take this video. And the video was a big hit back then, too, and it was Ray Stevens' Comedy Video Classics, which Ray Stevens is a singer, and he's very well known in the South and some parts of the East Coast. And he sings a lot of comedy songs, but he also sings Everything is Beautiful, which, you know, is a famous song that a lot of people know. So I said, okay. So I took that video to QVC, and it's a long story, but I got it in there, and it was a miracle that I got it in. And the reason I got it in is because they have these little TVs in the buying offices there and in the cubicles, and they had kept seeing Ray Stevens' Comedy Video Classics. This is back in 1993. So really, there was no one had ever bridged the gap between spot TV or infomercial TV and QVC or HSN. That happened later. So I made my presentation, they took it, and then Ray Stevens, I actually took him to QVC, I escorted him there, and he went on and he sold. And at that time, we held the record for the most number of videos sold in less than 6 minutes, and it was 25,000.
Just by having him go on and talk about the video.
He didn't even talk, Evan. They just said, Ray Stevens is here, and he'll be here. He'll be on in about 6 minutes, and they sold out in that 6 minutes, right?
Oh, geez.
So then we went there again, and a miracle happened. And this is pure direct response. And I've never told you this story, and I barely even talked about it in public. Mm. And here's how it went. At QVC, and at HSN as well, there's this green room where the guests stay before they're about to go live. Well, there's a little window where you can look through and you see your guest on television. Well, the second time Ray was on, I was watching him speak, and there's a little TV that was right next to the window, and it was, you know, in the green room, and that would show all the sales that are happening, and there would be these spikes that would go up. Like, he would say something, and I couldn't tell what it was because the green room is kind of like a soundproof room, right? So I kind of see him lip syncing, and all of a sudden, boom, the sales go way up. I go, damn, what did he just say? So I looked at the television set, and I said, let me turn up the mute button was on. So I turned that on. So now I was hearing Ray's voice. If you can picture this, there were two TVs there, one showing the sales coming in. That's marketing intelligence right there. Sales coming in real time, and Ray Stevens speaking. So he would say something, And then I would see a spike go up. And it would be something that I would never imagine would create a spike in sales, but it was there. And so pretty soon I see him say something, spike. And then he'd say something that I told him to say, no spike, you know? Mm. So I figured, wow, this is real-time direct response. It's even faster than television. I thought television was the only game in town back then. There was no internet, you know, commercial internet. And so that started this whole concept of finding out what the market wants first and then creating the marketing message. Most people create the message first and then go to market. But I found out what they wanted on QVC. And so basically we started recording these things. And then every time there was a spike, we would take that copy, that verbal copy, stick it into the, you know, transcribe them and put them into the space ads, put them into the catalog offers, put them into the direct mail, put them into the direct response TV spots. And then all of a sudden there would be more sales because the audience would tell us, Ray Stevens, Comedy Video Classics buyers would tell us why they were buying in real time at QVC. And so I did the same thing at HSN with other products. We did it again at QVC. We would take that little TV in the green room that would show us the sales that would come in real time, take the marketing communications and the promotional communications that it was just haphazard. We had no idea what was selling. And then when we found out what they were saying and the spikes in sales that were coming in, we would take that and then supplant that in other marketing communications, and all of a sudden sales doubled, tripled, quadrupled without spending an extra dime more on advertising or marketing. Our cost of acquisition of a customer went way down because we were a lot more efficient. And that was my first lesson in direct response marketing. Find out what the market wants as much as humanly possible. In my case, it was at QVC. That's how it started. And then write the marketing message. And I know with your seminars, with your copy online, you do the exact same thing.
You know, it's so fascinating to learn how people figure things out. And, you know, now when you learn that you were selling record-a-call answering machines as a manufacturer's rep, and then you watch this experience happen on QVC, and then you look at some of your kind of commercial success hits like Audio Generator and Ask Database and Teleseminar Secrets, it just all lines up. It all makes sense now. Because you learned it in the real world. You didn't just make this stuff up and then say, hey, I should build a piece of software so people can put testimonials on their websites, or hey, I should build this cute little database so that, you know, people can ask their customers what they want. You learned this stuff in the field, out there fighting with a gun in your hand, so to speak, and you used it to make money. And then you probably, I mean, I don't know the rest of the story, but you probably built all these tools for yourself and made money with them and then said, all right, I'll bet other people would like them.
Well, there's two questions I ask myself is what does the market want and how do I know that they want it? And I go about it not through conjecture or hearsay or guesswork. I go by observation. And if there's no data to observe, and usually it's through a 2,500-year-old technology called the Socratic method, which most institutions and academies and universities, some of the best in the world, are based on the Socratic method. Mm. It's about dialogue. It's not about monologue. Most direct response marketers market via monologue. They come up with a message and then they test. I like to do marketing arbitrage, not because I'm lazy, but because I want to make more money with the least amount of human effort. And that is the dialogue base of asking the market what it wants first, finding out that piece first, and then creating a message after they've told me. I've noticed that, and I've observed that people support what they help to create. So if you ask them what they want, and then you ask them why they want it so badly, and then you give it to them in the way that they want it, through the media source that they want it, because not everyone wants it through the internet, obviously. If you give it to them how they want, why they want, and you know, in the way that they want it via the media source, then you have a sale. And you knew that you had a sale beforehand.
In Altitude, we talk about two common kind of psychological mechanisms that prevent us from having success. And one of them is called emotional estimation, and the other one is called seeing only validation. So emotional estimation, seeing only validation. And what you're talking about here is one of the antidotes to those things, which is called data-driven decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Actually going out, testing the idea, seeing what the audience, the people that you want to have buy it, actually think, getting that data back, and then making a decision about whether or not it's a good idea, rather than saying, oh, I love this idea, and I know that they're going to love it too, so let me go throw a bunch of money at it.
And we're not paying people for focus groups. You know, when I did my thing at QVC and then later at HSN, I was watching what people were buying, how they were buying, and what the host was saying or the guest was saying with that host, because there's always a host and a guest on QVC and HSN. I was watching it in real time because I had a tool, which was this little closed circuit TV that was showing the sales coming in. Now, that TV was always there. It was always there for every other rep and sales person who came through QVC. I have no idea if they implemented and executed, you know, there's marketing intelligence, right? And execution intelligence. I have no idea if other people did the same thing. But for me, it made perfect sense that watch what people are saying and then look for the spike. I would see the spike and then I would go about 10 or 15 seconds before the spike and see what was said. And that became the marketing dialogue, the marketing communication, because I knew that that would elicit a response. It was almost like playing pin the tail on the donkey without a blindfold.
It seems so stupidly simple when you think about it. One of the things we do in our business is we try to have the different channels of marketing and distribution kind of out there getting our word out into the world. We look around, and if one of them works, we say, what worked over there? Would it work for one of the other ones? And one of the simplest examples is if we are doing Google pay-per-click or paid search, SEM, and we've got an ad that's really working well, we say, well, maybe we should take the headline from that ad and the body copy and make a banner ad and then go run it over here in some of our, you know, banner inventory where we run over here. And it's a similar mindset, but bottom line is if you find something that works, use it, mine it, get as much as you can out of it. Don't just say, oh, okay, well, it works. Let's find something new to do.
Well, it's interesting. Another story that you and I have never talked about was I worked for a company. It was a research firm in New York City. After I left the direct response TV agency in California, I left for New York, and I really cut my teeth with direct response electronic marketing, which I think I'm very good at. I'm very good at anything that you can market with, a media source that you can market with that has a plug or a battery. That's what I'm really good at, Electronic marketing. That's my definition of electronic marketing. And back then, we didn't have the internet so much. You know, 1994, the internet was not commercialized the way it is today. And so I had a fax machine. And I had this task of taking a toothpaste. Now imagine how many toothpaste manufacturers are out there. I mean, tons. You got Colgate, you get Procter & Gamble. You have all these huge companies throwing billions of dollars of advertising. And so I had to be a niche player. And the best definition of a niche I know is the Grand Canyon. Very narrow boundaries, right? And it's a mile deep and basically an inch wide if you look at the Earth. In fact, it's a millimeter wide and a mile deep instead of a mile wide and an inch deep. So I wanted to be a niche player. I had a toothpaste. And so right away, we made it the world's most expensive toothpaste. And it's still around. It's called Supersmile. Supersmile.com. It's still around. I still own a piece of the company. But my task was to take the company and turn it into a multi-million dollar company. And how do you do that with all these manufacturers? So I had to go into a niche. And so the niche I thought about that would work, and this was available to every other toothpaste manufacturer, but they didn't go after it.
They had money.
They had money and they didn't go after it. Mm-hmm. All they had to do was come up with a high-end product, which they could have, and they didn't go after it. And they still haven't gone after it. So I thought to myself, and ironically, it was after coming home from a movie with Amy, my wife. We weren't even married at the time. And I forget what I was doing, but I was just watching late night TV in Manhattan. All of a sudden, this thing hit me. Like, how am I going to sell Super Smile? And the idea was health spas, day spas. Okay. I mean, what good is perfect hair or perfect skin if you don't have a perfect smile? And that headline was the control headline for 2.5 years for all the postcards and all the fax broadcasts that went out. So I went after the health spa and day spa organizations that were affinity groups, such as the Day Spa Association. And there was a woman by the name of Hannah Laurie Levy. She was the president of an organization. And what I did is I utilized her list and I paid her a small affiliate, you know, commission for all sales. And I asked very specific questions. I think there were 8 questions. And all I had was direct mail and a fax machine. So I sent out a 1-page direct mail piece to all the day spas, which at the time there were about 3,000, 4,000 in the U.S. And in the PS, I asked them to fax back their answers to the survey that was on the back page. I didn't want to pay for a second page, right? So I asked them to send the fax, the questions, you know, the answers to the questions on the back page, and I gave them the fax number to fax it back. It was a very archaic ask campaign, if you will, mm-hmm. 1995. Mm-hmm. So here are the questions I asked. What types of skincare products do you currently offer to your spa clients? And I, you know, they were all multiple choice, national brands, private label brands, mixture of both, or we don't sell skincare products. And then there were some other things. What's the approximate product purchase during a typical client visit? You know, 10 to 25 bucks, 25 to 40, 40 to 60, over 60. And there were about 8 questions, right? I even asked them the question at approximately what time do you typically read your mail? 7 a.m. to 10 a.m., 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., 1 p.m. to 5 p.m., 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. You know, yeah. 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Do you know what the answer was?
Huh.
8 p.m. to 11 p.m.
Huh.
That was the... I couldn't believe it.
Because they're busy during the day, huh?
Yes. Yeah. So my envelope said, don't read this until 8:01 p.m. That was the teaser on the outside of the envelope. Right? And then... It was just very interesting, the results I got back. And so what it turned out being is no one had a toothpaste in their day spa. So I figured, all right, if I sell a toothpaste in a day spa, and it was a toothpaste that would stand upright, most toothpastes are horizontal. They're not vertical because the manufacturers want to manipulate shelf space in the grocery store chains and in the drug chains, so they go horizontal. You'll notice that when you go to the stores. Mm. Mine was vertical. So I told people at the day spa, it takes up very little shelf space. It has an outer box, which most toothpaste don't. And it looked like it was in a coax tube, which looks like a skincare product. And it had at the time a $12 retail value. Now it's 18 bucks. And so we sold it. And very, very quickly, we gobbled up a nice percentage of market share. And before too long, we had over 800 day spas selling Super Smile. And we developed about a $3 million business. We had no interest in Target stores and Walgreens. In fact, I was accepted there. I visited the buyers there. They said, okay, you know, bring it on. But they wanted all this advertising that we didn't have any money for. And we couldn't afford. So instead, we went after the small niche. And through fax broadcasting, we created a very healthy business, which has paid me a lot of money over the years. And it's still in existence. And now it's been the sweetheart product for many of the top celebrities. In fact, Donald Trump's kids, you know, brush with it, and so does Ivana Trump and a lot of other people. You know, Adam Sandler and you know all these people. So it was a very interesting case study. But it all started with a very simple direct mail letter, and I asked for their response back. And you know what I told them? I said, if you send me your toothpaste, I will send you a $12 tube of Super Smile. That was called a trade-in program. I had people FedExing me their toothpaste. Now, do you think I have a qualified prospect if someone is sending me their toothpaste?
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Obviously, right?
That's fantastic.
And so I not only get the survey results, but I got people to try it, and then I sent samples to all their estheticians. I sent them buttons saying, ask me about Super Smile. So, you know, the estheticians have the power of touch. It's one of the final bastions where you actually have client-to-client interaction. And so it was an amazing story. We're still in the day spas. And who said that you can't go into a narrow niche and make millions of dollars? We did it. And anyone listening right now can with direct response marketing, especially with the internet.
Okay. So I would really like to talk not only about marketing, but I want to talk about growing a company and scaling your business and working virtually and leadership and so forth. But some of these stories you're telling me about marketing, let's just stick with marketing for a minute. So once you learned these lessons and you put it all together, what were some of your first big hits doing marketing using teleseminars, recorded messages, and the internet?
It started with marketing with postcards, and marketingwithpostcards.com is still up. And the reason I went after that niche is I wanted to be an information marketer, and that was in the year 2001. And I worked like an animal and made $63,700.
$63,000 you made in 2001.
In 2001 I made $63,700, and that was an 80% drop from the $300,000 I made on salary the year before. We moved from New York to San Francisco. If you remember what happened in 2001, it wasn't a very good year.
No, bad timing.
The bubble burst, there was 9/11, and it wasn't the best year to start your business. But nevertheless, after the birth of my son, Gabriel, we moved back to California. I signed a non-compete with the people at SuperSmile, so I lost all my contacts, basically had to start from scratch. Poor Alex, right? So,
hey, that was the year I started my business.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you're a much faster learner than I am.
Maybe so, not. Maybe I was just a little luckier.
Well, I dealt at that point with marketers. I was B2B. I was not B2C like you are. And in the B2B market, I was laughed at because I had a $247 course, and I was selling it during a time when people were selling $20 ebooks. And so I sold it online, and that is electronic marketing. It was a three-ring binder, and I had a CD that had audio on it that talked about postcard marketing. And the only reason I focused on postcard marketing, Eben, is because Dan Kennedy had the direct marketing, or let's call it the direct mail niche, M-A-I-L. Jay Abraham had the direct response marketing niche. Corey Rudel at the time, he was alive, and unfortunately he passed away not too long ago, but he had the internet marketing niche. And all the niches were taken. No one wanted postcard marketing, so that's the one I took, which were really web pages by mail or billboards by mail. That's what I called it. So I sold it online electronically, and then I mailed it through the mail. It was a hard product. In other words, physical, had thump value. So that was the first product that I had. And then what happened was I noticed that I was pathetic at generating traffic online. However, what I was really good at was converting that traffic, what little traffic I got. So I got up to, this is almost comical, but I got up to 90 visitors a day. That's what I got at marketingwithpostcards.com.
That was
90 visitors a day. That was a ton of traffic for me. And I'll never forget when I made my first five-figure month, and I wrote a headline saying, how to make five figures month after month on the internet by attracting less than 100 visitors a day. And that was a teleseminar, and the course I taught was Traffic Conversion Secrets, which was my first teleseminar series. And I put it was a two-day call, and I invited a bunch of big names, and they all attended. Back then, there were huge names for me, and it was a $249 two-day teleseminar, which was unheard of at the time. And I got, I think, 52 people to attend. So I thought I had died and gone to heaven. Well, I thought I had gone to heaven without the inconvenience of dying.
You made like $12,000 in 2 days.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And that was
better than your best month.
Ever.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. So I thought, wow, I'm selling marketing with postcards, and I'm making five figures, getting less than 100 visitors a day. And this teleseminar thing, I'm doing that in less than 2 days. I'm going after the teleseminar thing. That's more electronic marketing based, right?
Mm.
Now, in the process, there are a lot of stick strategies, and it's a course that Joe Polish and I teach. What we did with stick strategies is someone would get a voice broadcast thanking them for the order, telling them, hey, listen, we just shipped your order, and we're waving bye-bye to the package. Look for it in 2 to 3 days. And then there were other stick strategies where people would electronically get a fax broadcast if they gave us a fax number, or would get an email after the purchase. Many people have prospecting autoresponders, but very few, I mean, I know you do, but very few people have customer autoresponders where you try to build value, and you build value after the sale because it's a lot easier to get a second and third sale after you have an initial sale. So my autoresponders for customers ran 365 days, not every day, but at least once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had that, and that was electronic. And then someone would get a live call from me personally when they got an order. And after I got like maybe 10 or 12 orders a day, then I handed that off to a team member, and I started creating a virtual team. I don't have 80 people like you do, 80 plus people, but I do have 16 people now, all virtual. I work out of my home. So it started with marketing with postcards, and then because I had a nice conversion rate. It turned into internet marketing and being the conversion strategist. And because I was selling a lot and I was accelerating the growth of my business through teleseminars in a very highly leveraged way, you know, productivity to me is maximum results in minimum time. That's productivity. Leverage is maximum productivity with minimum effort. That's my definition of leverage. And so I was being maximally productive with less effort with teleseminars. And I don't know many people who watch or read or listen to a web page for an hour, but I know lots of people that are listening to me on a weekly basis, 1 hour at a time on a teleseminar. So it's kind of like having people consuming your marketing message for an entire hour or more. So I found no better way to do it. So then after Traffic Conversion Secrets, since it was delivered through teleseminars, I started teaching teleseminar secrets. And very soon, what happened is my annual income in 2001 turned into a quarterly income in 2002, a monthly income in 2003, a weekly income in 2004, a daily income in 2005, and in 2006, an hourly income. I did it 16 times. This year, I've done it more than 16 times so far, and I plan on doing it 16 more times before the end of the year. And it's amazing what is possible through teleseminars. You think it's the revenue that we're going after. I mean, we're expecting to do about $5 million this year. We did under $3 million last year. We did less than $1.5 million the year before. Each year we've been doubling. Mm. You would think it's the revenue that makes it so sweet. For me, it's more the lifestyle. Because once you have a teleseminar, you record it. If it's notable, you transcribe it. And at the speed of sound, writing with your mouth, not with your hands. Remember that Rosser Reeves commercial, right? You know, melt in your mouth, not in your hands, yep, M&Ms, yep, right? Yep. Well, I write with my mouth, not with my hands. And by transcribing the audio, just like this is a product right now that we're creating in real time, I can write 50 to 60 pages an hour with my mouth. I can write 3 to 5 pages with my hands. So I chose to write with my mouth. And so that's why I can put out so much product and double the size of my company every year so far. Just because of the teleseminar concept. And it started with a very simple experience of direct response observation in the green room at QVC in the year 1993.
Yeah, you're writing 3 to 5 pages if you're the fastest typist that I've ever seen. I mean, I can write 8 to 10 pages in 4 hours if I'm hepped up on caffeine, which I rarely drink, and I'm having a really good day.
Yeah, I think 3 is really moving it.
Oh yeah, you're at the outside of the edge there of talent if you can write 3 to 5. Or
I can
3.
Right now we're writing at about 45 to 50 pages.
Yeah,
an hour.
Yeah, it's amazing. So a couple of things. One, conversion. Conversion is what I think of myself as being all about. I try to just stay focused on conversion. And to me, conversion is getting a person to take some action to advance the relationship to the next level toward a sale. You've heard the difference. I mean, I know you know sales, but there's a difference between what they call a continuation and an advance. And
yes.
The continuation is, all right, great, well, let's talk again sometime. And an advance is, great, let's make an appointment to talk Monday morning at 10 a.m. so I can show you what I've got.
Yes, it's more of a commitment.
Yeah, exactly. What have you learned about conversion as a mindset or a philosophy? And then what are some of the best techniques you've ever learned that increased your conversion the most?
The single most important thing in a conversion is to request a decision. The indecisive on your list are the most expensive people on your list, even though email is free. If you're a direct mail marketer, M-A-I-L, then those are the most expensive people because they're not decisive. What you want to do is ask for a decision. So with conversion, I don't ask them yes or no. Like I don't ask for a yes and then just keep it at that. I ask for a yes and then a no thanks. What does that mean? That means I'm asking for a decision. I want them to commit to a no, or I want them to commit to a yes. And I do this on most of my teleseminars. I mean, I do a monthly call with Jack Canfield, who was in The Secret, and he's written The Success Principles and The Chicken Soup for the Soul series, and he sold over 100 million books so far in his lifetime. He's on route to do 1 billion books. That's his goal. And I designed that process for his monthly teleseminars, which is nothing more than AskJackCanfield.com. They're just Ask Jack Canfield calls. and we're creating product from scratch. But the single most important part of the process in that conversion is the yes, I want it now, or no, thanks. And here's the process. It's a very cool model, Evan, and it's a model that is making tens of thousands of dollars. It's a free teleseminar if they listen to it live. If you want the audio to it, not the transcripts, just the audio, it's $10. If you wait 1 week, then it's now $15, and that's where it stays. So it's a very low hurdle, but there is a penalization for indecisiveness. In other words, if you don't decide in a week's time. So it's free, 10, 15. And the reason the conversion works so well, because about 30% of the people say yes, is we say, would you like the audio replay to this on an unlimited basis so you can listen to it over and over and over again for the rest of your life? For the next 7 days, it's $10. After that, it's $15. Totally transparent. You'd be shocked at how many people get upset because they didn't make a decision within 7 days. But, you know, that's their problem, not mine. So I ask them for a yes or a no thanks. And that creates more conversion. I ask for a decision. Now, what's interesting is the yes is taking them down a certain customer path. Okay, for me, they're students. It takes them down a student path. For a no thanks, that can take them down another path. So it doesn't have to be no thanks and it's a dead end. It can be a no thanks and take them, you know, in England, they have these roundabouts, right? Where you can take five or six different roads. You can do that as well. The no thanks can lead to other options where you can monetize that. I have found that to win the conversion game, the single most important thing is to demand a decision from people visiting your website or reading your autoresponder. And it's painful for people to say no because it implies loss. They're losing something. So that's number one. Number two, I have found in my experience with my market, I have found this to be true. And one of the things I'm certain of is this. If you have video or audio, you are going to increase your conversion if you have a high-end product. If you have a high-end product and you have video or audio, I mean, your videos for Altitude for the seminar were mind-boggling. And they work very well for me because I was one of your affiliate partners. And the people who actually went to the event and experienced it called me up and thanked me, you know, for paying the $10,000 to attend because it was the most amazing experience they said they ever had in 5 days. In fact, after day two, they said I could have packed my bags and left. And so what I find, and you had these videos that were mind-boggling. They were very content-rich, and you gave me so many ideas. I'm doing the same thing for Teleseminar Secrets, you know, this year because they were just so highly content-driven, and it was interesting. It was engaging. So audio and video, putting multimedia into your website, not just the written word, because you can't do this with the written word. Listen to this. You can't whisper with the written word. You can't raise your voice with the written word. How many exclamation points are you going to utilize? But you can draw more motion and marketing intimacy with the student, the client, the patient, the customer, whatever you call them, the prospect, with audio or video, because you accelerate the know, like, and trust process. I mean, three reasons why people buy. They know, like, and trust you. I mean, period. So I found that to be the second element, multimedia on a website. If I could have multimedia and a direct mail message, I'd do it. I prefer to send them to a web page, have them opt in, and turn that physical mail into a prospect whom I can email to for free. And that's a conversion that I really, really love. I use postcards because it's naked mail. There's no envelope. And, you know, everyone is reading the message in the office. My mail goes to B2B. It goes to businesses. So that's number two. And really the third thing I have found to be incredibly powerful in the conversion process is transparency. I tell people, if I'm an affiliate of someone, I tell them I'm an affiliate. I tell them that this is an affiliate link. I mean, it sounds silly, but I do that, and I do very well doing it. If I have an affiliate forwarded domain versus the company domain, in other words, if they go to the company domain, I don't get credit for it because that's the main website. Or if I have an affiliate link, I usually forward it through a URL that's a .com of some kind, such as altitudeaccess.com. That was my affiliate link pass through there so I could verbally give that. And it did very well, as you know. So I find that being transparent and telling people the truth, nothing as persuasive as the truth, parting the curtain, if you will, is the most persuasive way to convert people into a sale or into a prospect. And I don't know if it's a lost art or not, but I do it selfishly and benevolently. You know, benevolently because I want them to know the truth, selfishly because I want to make more money. So, you know, having those three components, asking for a decision, basic, having multimedia, and being completely transparent increases conversion. I do very well when I'm speaking on the platform. My opening 5 minutes is this. I have three goals with you. If I'm in an audience on a stage, I tell them, here are my three goals. Number one, I'm going to be as transparent with you as I possibly can. You're going to see, I'm going to part the curtain, and there is no curtain. You're going to see all the wheels turning so that you see what I see. Number two, I want you to run out of ink because I want to give you as much content as I possibly can in the hour and a half I've been given. And number three, and here's the transparency, I'm going to do everything in my power to motivate, persuade, and influence you to continue your education with me. So the order form you see in front of you right now is not going to be passed out at the end of my talk. It's right there. And anytime you feel the urge to stand up and take that order form to the back table and purchase Teleseminar Secrets, feel free to do so. That's how I start. And then I dive into content. And typically, I'm one of the top producers at seminars, and I'm blessed, you know, with that distinction. I think partially because we have multimedia. I have a PowerPoint that has audio and video. I ask for a decision, and I'm completely transparent. And I think that when you're transparent and you have multimedia and you ask for a decision, I think that it increases your conversion geometrically.
So one of the things I've noticed, Alex, kind of bridging the gap from just promoting things to building a company that promotes things, is the people I know who have most of the time, that have built companies that are increasing by 20, 50, 100% a year or more in size, are that these are leaders who are focused on promotion, sales, marketing, conversion, and they're personally interested in it. And most of the businesses that I know that are struggling in one way or another, in a lot of cases, right, almost all really, in my experience, when I talk to the person who's at the helm, they're trying to find someone to do their marketing for them, right? They're trying to outsource it. Oh, I just need to hire a marketing guy to do that kind of stuff. And I'm wondering if you see any overlap in that area yourself.
I have some very strong feelings about that, Evan. I feel if you're outsourcing your marketing, which is the single most important element in your business, the revenue driver of your business, where you're actually changing minds and changing behavior, if you're giving that and outsourcing that to someone else who's not part of your company, then you're giving a newborn baby out to an orphanage. Even worse, your baby may be stillborn. You are giving the most important marketing driver to grow your business, sometimes exponentially, sometimes geometrically, sometimes on a 20-30% basis annually. You're giving that up to someone else who doesn't care as much about your baby as you do. It is like giving up a newborn baby to an orphanage. I think it is the greatest business sin anyone can commit, and yet I see it happening every single time with many, many thought leaders who have books or have audio cassette tapes, and they'll actually come to me and want me to do the marketing for them, which is something I don't do. And I would never do that with someone else. I would never hand over the reins to my business, which is the marketing, to someone else. Because every company and every business is a marketing business. There's not one business that doesn't have marketing or promotion inherently involved to the growth of that business. And so to give that up to someone else is to give up your baby to an orphanage. And I don't think anyone would do that, whether they're a parent or not. And I wouldn't advise anyone to do it. Learn marketing. That's the first thing.
So important.
You should learn. In fact, everyone listening right now probably knows this already and knows the importance of marketing. But if you're wondering if you can give up your marketing, don't do it.
Yeah. You know, you and I have a gentleman that we both know. His name is Bill Phillips, and very successful business guy and marketer. And I remember when Joe Polish, who's worked with him for many years, once told me that when he used to work at EAS, a lot of the time he'd just keep himself locked in his office writing copy, and that a lot of the sales letters and a lot of the marketing pieces and so forth that were in, what was it, Muscle Media, I think, was the magazine that they had?
Yes.
Were
yes.
all written by him, and that he would actually write all this stuff. And I thought, wow, now that really speaks powerfully to me, because this is a guy that's, you know, rumored to be worth hundreds of millions of dollars and made it while he was in his 30s, and he was at the helm doing the marketing.
Well, it's not rumored. You and I have been to his house.
Yeah, right.
And we know he's worth hundreds of millions. And I think why he is because he took marketing responsibility, the ability to respond to your own marketing. If you're the source of your business, I mean, if you are where the buck stops, if you're the captain, you know, of the ship, then I firmly believe that you can't do enough marketing. And why not write your own copy? If he can't write, you can certainly speak. No one has speaker's block. And just have it recorded and transcribed, and 80% of it from there can go. You can hire a copywriter to revise it and sweeten it a little bit, but anyone can write copy. And of course, the written word and the spoken word, that's the DNA of marketing. That's the genetic code of marketing. So I heard that Bill did that, and you and I both know Bill, and we've met him on several occasions. And I think if he didn't do that, he wouldn't be worth as much, because as the source of his marketing, he wrote the message which went to his readers, and he knew his readers better than anyone. So even outsourcing copywriting, you know, I've hired a lot of copywriters, and usually they don't get it until the fifth or sixth letter, because they don't know the market well enough. Mm. The business owner knows the market if they've been doing their homework. So I think the chief copywriter should be the business owner, even if they can't write. And I know you did that.
Yep.
And everyone else should do that. And when it becomes overwhelming that you have so many sales, you can't keep up, then you hire the copywriter, which I think you did as well, and you trained them. And as the source, everything runs through your veins. Everything runs through your mind. And so the business never loses its original heritage. Versus if you outsource that, it's not your heritage, it's someone else's. And they don't care as much about it as you do. It's fundamentally incorrect to give up marketing to an outside organization. Again, giving up your baby to an orphanage.
And I think that's valuable to know when you're getting your business off the ground and growing, to not be asking yourself the question, okay, when can I get rid of this marketing stuff and get on to something else? That's one I think you really want to always keep your finger on that pulse and be involved with.
Well, what can be more important than that?
Nothing.
I can't think of anything. Even a team member, as important as they are not as important in the beginning as the marketing. Michael Masterson, who runs Early to Rise and is part of a subsidiary of Agora Publishing, $300 million company. I recently emceed an event of theirs. And he writes. He spends most of his time writing copy. That's what he says in his books. And what's astounding is that he says the first thing you should do in a company is just focus on sales. And when it comes to multiplying sales, you know, when back when Gary Halpert was alive, you know, he would say that marketing is salesmanship multiplied. That was his two-word definition, and that's a very elegant definition, salesmanship multiplied. So imagine having a salesperson in the form of an email or a website or a direct mail letter or a postcard or a fax broadcast or a voice broadcast. Well, that's a salesperson. And so when you multiply that and you make one effort and then it has multiple impact, that's, again, going to heaven without the inconvenience of dying. Well, that's what Michael Masterson does. And, you know, he is the chief marketing officer for all intents and purposes. He doesn't give that up. He writes copy. And so even if you're, you know, helping to run a $300 million company, you still don't have to take your finger off the pulse of the DNA of all your sales and marketing efforts, which is writing or creating content and promotional materials that get people more, you know, get people through the door. Nothing can be more important. Bookkeeping isn't, HR isn't. All that stuff comes later, and he calls it the OSS. You got to find your optimal sales strategy, your OSS, ultimate sales strategy. For me, I just call it the marketing process. Once you find your marketing process and you stick with it, then The sales come pouring in, and you've done it, as you revealed, through your quizzes online, because you engage people, and then through your opt-in pages, which didn't have as much pull, because I don't think it was engaging, but I think you pioneered a lot of stuff that many people have been standing on your shoulders of since 2001. So it's the marketing that starts everything. Then you can focus on other things. But I think that you should always be in touch with that marketing. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that you and I have been talking about over the last few years as we've been getting to know each other, as your business has grown and my business has grown, is this whole other universe that you have to learn about once your business starts becoming successful. Hiring people, managing projects, systems, bookkeeping, money. What are some of the things that you've learned now that you've grown a multi-million dollar company yourself that you manage from your bedroom office in a suburban neighborhood kind of thing? What are some of the things that you've learned that were counterintuitive, you never would have guessed, but that someone who's just getting their business off the ground could really benefit from?
I've learned them from you. I wish I could say that I've learned them from the marketplace, but I learned them from the ground that you've plowed. In fact, I learned a lot of them through discussion, and it didn't really drill a deep groove into my mind where it really stuck until I went to the first altitude training. And a lot of people were looking for tactics, but I was there for strategy, and what you taught me, and you never stated it this way, but this is what I got from it, is once your business grows, and the sweet spot for that growth is, as was indicated at the training, is between 2 million and 20 million, sometimes 2 to 10 million, but I looked at 2 to 20 because I like to think of 20 as not only doable, but inevitable.
Yeah.
Which is something you also taught me was inevitable thinking. It's not about how to do it anymore. I mean, you can have your finger on the pulse, but it's not about you doing all the hows. It's about who. First who, then how, right? And Jim Collins talks about that in Good to Great. But if you find the right who's, they bring the hows with them. But the only way you know that you have the right who's is for you have done the hows first. And it's not a Dr. Seuss book. I mean, it's reality. And Bill Gates is a great example. He was a programmer, right? So he knew programming. And I know that the people that he hired first had to be world-class programmers because he knew programming. He wasn't going into something blind. He had the blinders off because he'd already experienced it. So you got to know a lot about your business, which you knew. You have to, I mean, you taught one of your chief copywriters copywriting. You did that because you had personal experience. And I mean, you're the best at this. I mean, you are a voracious learner. You structure it so that each who that you bring on surpasses you in everything that they do. And that's one thing that, I've learned from you is when you create a team that's world-class, when you create a team that's world-class, they are surpassing the business owner or the captain in such a way that the captain is now leading from behind. He's not leading from the front. He's not command and control. It's an engage and enroll. And they're better at what they do than you could possibly ever be because they focus on it. And you know that because you've allowed them to have the authority and the responsibility to do what it takes. So at the $2 million level, which I was lucky enough to hit about a year and a half ago, I started bringing on the right who's. But I didn't know what a star was. I didn't know what a driver was. I didn't have these criteria. You taught me the criteria to drivers and stars and what to look for and what passive aggression really looks like and what driving really looks like. And I found that if I want to minimize the amount of effort that I put into my marketing, then I have to have the right people dispatched doing the right things. And I have a virtual team like you do. And, we have weekly meetings in different areas. And my favorite meeting of the week is what I call traffic school. And one of the gentlemen you met, Marty, and I have four people that are in charge of driving more traffic because without traffic, it's hard to get conversion, right? And so that's all they do.
You have a weekly meeting organized around the one key thing that you're trying to do.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Because that which you focus on expands. You know, whatever you draw your attention to will attract more and more energy. I mean, it's almost spiritual. It's a universal law. And so for a certain time period, I like 90 days because Lee Iacocca taught me that. If you focus on something day in and day out, week in and week out, month in and month out, for 90 days, something miraculous is going to happen. And then a second thing that you really amplified for me. I knew it all along, but you kind of, it's kind of like I was at the boiling point at 212 degrees, but what can you do at boiling? You can boil an egg. It doesn't do much. But at 213, you have steam. You can drive a locomotive or a steamship. And it was that little extra degree that you gave me that allowed me to really have some impact. And that was the concept of not only having these weekly team meetings, but split testing. And so my favorite question, now when you call up Michael Dell's company, Dell Computer, they say, what can I build for you today? What can I build for you today? Hmm. You know, and they build a computer for you. And, you know, he has, I think right now, his inventory is like less than 4 hours. It's miraculous what he's created. What can I build for you? What an amazing question to ask. Well, our question with our company is, what are we split testing today? What are we split testing today? We figured if we split test five things a week, like for every business day, we split test something different, a control against something else every single day. And we actually plan the split tests. If this wins, we split test that. If that wins, we split test that. Well, that's over 225 split tests a year. Over 10 years, I mean, that's well over 2,500 split tests. Well, your company is going to grow with that many split tests. So just a very simple question, what are we split testing today? And you test a lot. I found that it has accelerated the growth of my business because everyone's behind it. That's the initiative. And it's not good or bad. It either is worse or better. You know, it's kind of like what Buckminster Fuller said. First, you test, you fail, then you learn. And hopefully you're learning at a higher level. So test, fail, learn. Test, fail, learn. And, you know, he was an ingenious man. He had patents of all kinds. The geodesic dome was just one. And so that's the philosophy we have. What are we split testing today? And we test, we fail or succeed, and then we learn. And you really put me over the hump of looking at that. So The first is who instead of how when you get to the $1.5 to $2 million mark per year. And then the second is test. And split testing, there are other forms of testing, but I like to keep it really simple. You know, A-B split test. What are we split testing today? And if we do five per week, it's inevitable that we will grow.
That's such a great little mindset because when you ask your team on a regular basis, what are we split testing today? What are we split testing today? What are we split testing today? It drives home the idea of data and optimization and discipline and just tightening down the screws one more notch. It's like when you go get your tires replaced on your car and the guy comes out with the pneumatic thing and takes off the lug nuts and they put them back on. And then he comes out with that big giant torque wrench and just torques them all down one extra turn. And there's always a little bit more that you can go. And most people are just satisfied with where they're at. But especially when you have electronic marketing methods and internet marketing methods, and it's a giant system where you're pouring leads in at the top. I mean, you know, you've seen the three boxes when you grow a business. You know, if you increase your leads, you increase your conversion, and you increase your back end each by 10%, you don't grow by 10%. You grow by, you know, as Jay Abraham says, you grow by 33 1/3%. They just multiply each other over and over and over. So that's a fantastic one. And it's a great way to get that mindset into your team. I think I mentioned to you earlier that at the Altitude program, we were talking about split tests. And I said, who here in the audience split tests things on a regular basis? And we had a lot of savvy business owners and internet marketers there and so forth. And a good percentage of the room raised their hand. And then I said, okay, you know, who split tests something once a month? And then, you know, some of the hands went down. And every 2 weeks, every week, a couple of times a week, and then every day. And at every day, I don't remember, there were probably six or seven hands that were up in the room of people who split test something every day. And I said, just for fun, how much business do you do? I said, just yell it out. And, you know, one guy said $10 million a year, and one guy said $3.5 million. Another said, I do a couple of million a month, and one guy said $20 to $30 million. And I noticed that it was many of the superstars, the top performers that had $10, $20, $30, $40 million companies were the ones that split tested every day. And I don't think it's a coincidence. I think that it's a mindset or a philosophy of optimization, discipline, data-driven decisions. It's a great one.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. A lot of people just starting out, Eben, think of themselves as startups. And they say, well, I'm too small to split test. But when you really come to think about it, how many responses does it take to have a successful split test? Not to have usable data, but to have a successful split test where you say, you know what, that was a split test. How many responses do you need? In my world, it's one. The moment you get one response where you're split testing one thing over the next, and then you get another response, and you found that someone chose that A or B, you have a successful split test. So if you get at least one or two responses, you have successfully split tested. And never mind, you don't have enough data. Whatever the standard deviation is, 200 responses, you know, online, or 50 responses offline. Doesn't matter what the amounts are. What matters is going through the methodology, because even if you don't utilize the data, just being in that mindset, I know you're all about mindset. If you just get your team behind the mindset that this is not a business about profits, it's a business about testing, because we're in the business of direct response. Direct response testing improves. And the definition of an entrepreneur is increasing productivity. So you become more productive when you test one against the other. That's about growth. And you grow by default. It's almost, the growth comes as a side effect. What you're focusing on is the testing.
Exactly.
And it's so simple to do, yet people don't do it because they're focused on other things, such as graphics or an opt-in box or a domain or an affiliate link, when the split test is the single most important thing to grow the business. So when you adopt that mindset, when it gets underneath your hide or in your, you know, inside your nervous system to do it, and your team absorbs that as well, then you're going to grow just as a side effect. It's not even going to be your primary focus. You will grow by default, because that's what split testing can do. It's one of those world-class questions that you can ask yourself. What am I split testing today? If your answer is nothing, then you have 365 chances in the next year to make it something. And then you can make it something again and again. And if you've never split tested, one time is 100% increase. Two times is 200% and so on. You got 365 chances from this day forward, if you've never done it, to do it in the next year. I encourage you to do it at least 12 times, once a month, and then hopefully once a week, and then once a day, and watch what happens to your business. Automatically, it will grow without even focusing on it.
Can I ask you one last question?
Sure.
I got one final question for you. I've noticed that the steps to success, or the path to success, or the next thing that you need to do in business is typically not obvious, and often, and even usually, counterintuitive. Is there something that you've learned or seen or a habit pattern that successful business owners, as you call them, entrepreneurial CEOs, have, something that they've learned that they do that's not obvious, it's counterintuitive, but they do it consistently, that you think is a direct path to success?
You know, I'm taken back by that question, because you have never asked me that question. I have the answer that has added an extra zero on my net worth. I know the answer for me and for any electronic marketer or information publisher out there listening right now. And it is absolutely yes, I do know. And it comes down to another world-class question. And here it is. It's totally counterintuitive, yet it has made me millions. And here it is. I can't believe you asked me that question. Actually, I'm ecstatic. Thank you for asking me that question. Most people in the information marketing world, and most information marketers who are listening to this, are probably electronic marketers, because it's a lot more cost efficient to do it electronically, online, and, you know, through the electronic marketing media forms. Most people who are an information marketer will ask themselves, how do I protect my content? How do I keep my content from being stolen? Okay? Now, that's the question that they most readily ask. And, you know, in your world, and you've talked about moving the free line, and most people ask, you know, how do I give away as little as possible and make the most amount of money? And your counterintuitive to that is, how do I move the free line to the right and give more and give my best stuff away, right? Mm-hmm. Well, this is analogous to your free line concept, which everyone listening right now should know about and I hope has gotten access to. My question that I asked myself about 3.5 years ago wasn't, how do I protect my content or how do I prevent people from stealing my content? The question I asked instead is, how do I make gobs of money when people steal from me? If people are giving away passwords and usernames, if people are giving away digital content for free, if people are giving my portable media players that are preloaded away, if people are giving away membership site access or ebooks or audio content away when they're not supposed to, how do I make money? That's the question I asked.
That is a fantastic question.
Here's the way you do it. There are two things that people want from you if you're a trainer, teacher in electronic marketing as an information marketer, like I am. They want skills and tools. The skills is your information. The tools is the software or whatever makes that information more easily consumable or executable. So I'll give you an example. Teleseminar Secrets teaches people how to use the information in putting together a teleseminar, the skill of putting together a teleseminar, and the skill of putting a website to get them to register for a teleseminar, right? Along with the tool of having a bridge line or a template, a website to get that process moving along. So the skill is teaching people how to conduct teleseminars and how to create the content for teleseminars through the ASK methodology, which is I teach. That's a skill. But the tool are the bridge lines that people have questions about, or the, let's say, the one shopping cart or the autoresponder or the broadcast tools that we have for email, or audio generator, instant video generator, all the other tools that we have out there. They want to know, how do I make my life easier? So, you know, I'm not just, you know, pounding away at this skill and making money. So here's what I've done. I teach skills in one case, Teleseminar Secrets, at teleseminarsecrets.com. I teach a course every year for $2,000. That's to learn a skill. If someone stole that from me and handed it to someone they weren't supposed to, I still make money, because embedded in teaching that skill are all the tools that people will buy to make their life easier. So ASK Database, Marketing Makeover Generator, MarketersChoice.net, Instant Telewebcast, all the tools. If they stole the $2,000 course away from me and were smiling because the sneaky little side of them, and everyone has a sneaky little side. Mm-hmm. So let's say the sneaky little side were like, ooh, I got this for free. It's $2,000. I'm going to be into them about $100 a month anyway, because they need the tools to make the skills not only more consumable, but easier to do. So if you have an information product, make sure that you litter that information with tools, whether they're affiliate links or your own software tools that makes life easier. Make sure that even when people steal from you, you will make money from them. And Evan, this is what's so fascinating. I have found this to be true because I have measured it, because I know who steals from me by IP address, right? I have found that the people who steal from me are the ones who buy faster the tools. I have no idea why. I mean, maybe they thought they saved the money, you know, on learning the skill so that they're going to buy the tools. But I think the sneaky little side, you know, got the skill for free when they should have paid $2,000 for it. And they said, okay, now that I have this skill for free, I got to get the tool so I can learn even faster, right? And so I'm into them about $100 to $150 a month, because $30 here, $47 there, right? $69 there. And it's incredible what's possible. And that is the residual side of the business, because it's a tool. I don't have to maintain that. Every year I teach Teleseminar Secrets and I enjoy it, but I don't have to maintain ASK Database. I just have to improve it, but I don't have to constantly teach people how to utilize it, because we have video tutorials for that. We have audio tutorials for that. I don't have to have people do that with Instant Telewebcast or some of the other tools that we have, audio generator, et cetera, et cetera. So the world-class question, if you can figure out a way to do it, and it's easy to do it, just find tools and embed them in your skills mechanism with your information product, is not how do I protect my content, but how do I make lots of money when people steal my content? And that's what you do, what I just described.
Mm. You know, that's brilliant. And I could really see that working for just about any type of business, because every business has something that their customers do that's the thing that annoys them, right?
That's right.
Maybe it's a furniture store. The customer tries to talk them down on price, or, you know, whatever it is. Maybe it's a mortgage company, and maybe it's the customer likes to shop for other, you know, rates, or whatever it is. There's probably always a way to make it so that when the customer does the thing that usually annoys you, you win.
Well, in the Eben Pagan vernacular, linguistically, I think this is the way you would phrase it. What would make it inevitable for me to make money when customers steal from me?
Yeah.
And there's an answer. And if you have an answer, then you have the keys to the castle, because you want people not only to buy your stuff, but to steal your stuff, because you will make money either way. And I think it's a great business model, because what a great model to make money when people steal from you.
Yeah.
You know, you make it both ways. And so that is the counterintuitive methodology and question. That's the world-class question. Like, another world-class question is, what will I split test today? That's world-class. But the world-class question that that I think added another zero to my net worth was the one I just asked, is, you know, what would make it inevitable for me to make money when people steal from me? And the final world-class question that I think should be on every scrolling marquee of the screensaver of someone's PC or Macintosh is this: what don't I see? What don't I see? There's plenty of stuff you don't see in your business. If you keep asking yourself, what don't I see, it'll get you out of the boundaries that you're thinking in and expand your thinking. And that's what I'll leave you with.
Mm. So I'm gonna end with this. I did a lot of teleseminars to promote my Altitude program, and I haven't done teleseminars really before this. I've done a few and a couple of training classes. But I worked with a lot of really big name marketers, business people, doing teleclasses for their lists. And my experience doing the teleclass with you, doing the multiple teleclasses with you for your list and for your partners and so forth, showed me that you get this at a level that nobody gets it. There were 100 little things that you did. I was sitting there preparing for the class, taking notes on the things you were doing to host your own teleclasses, from the way you introduced it to the time you got on and how you let the people interact and how you handled questions and how you set up the web page. And it made me realize, in an experiential way, and I'm not just saying this, but it made me realize that you are 100 light years ahead of other people that do teleclasses, because you just really, really know this and you really do a good job with it. And so with that little, you know, shameless endorsement, if someone wanted to get involved in your teleclass training program, how would they do that?
Teleseminarsecrets.com.
And there are a couple of other tools that I also want to just, you know, endorse and just, you know, tell people to go use. Ask Database, amazing tool for getting information from your customers. How does someone get your Ask Database?
AskDatabase.com.
This isn't very hard, is it?
No.
And you've got some of these other tools, and they can go. You've just got AlexMondozian.com up where it links to all your tools, right?
Yeah, that has all my tools, but it's also the blog that has a lot of audio. So I welcome you just to go there. There's no opt-in required to listen to some of the electronic marketing tips and strategies I teach. And you can just listen to it. I'm a big, big fan of audio, Eben, just like this call right now, because people are probably listening to it as they're multitasking.
Yeah, right.
And that's dead time learning. You can't do that with the written word. You can't be in traffic and read a book, but you can listen to something while in traffic. Or you can't work on some copy and read something else because the copy has your attention, but you can listen to this interview. So I'm a huge fan of dead time learning, and that's exactly what we're doing right now. So audio, you can do anything but add audio, whether it's through audiogenerator.com or some of the other tools that are out there, then I would highly encourage you to start adding audio to your web pages, because even if you have not so good voice, use another voice and make sure that you draw people in and tell them to look at the opt-in box or get the ethical bribe or whatever it is that you have to offer on your web pages. Mm.
Well, I'm nothing but a fan of your stuff, and I appreciate everything you've done to help me with Altitude. And I think that anyone that's interested in learning to market themselves better electronically could do a lot worse than to check out your stuff.
Well, thank you, Evan. I'm going to tell you this, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart, but what I'm learning, you've already forgotten. So listen to Evan and all of these interviews, because he not only has the juice, he not only has the insights experientially, but he tracks down the people who do. Mm. And I'm just one piece of that, and I'm sure all these interviews, you're going after, you know, best of breed and bleeding edge information. So I can't wait to learn from the other ones, and thank you for having me on. It's an honor.
Thanks, Alex.